It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Well, I'm either in Israel or on my way there, I think, maybe. Or maybe not. I don't know.
This is number 5 in a row. So if you have written this email in the last 5 weeks going, I'm not reading my email, number one, I'm sure we're backlogged.
We're sorry. Two, I imagine we enjoyed them and thought they would have been great.
And still may use them. We've got a list now from our previous hiatus. But, yeah, we get some of the best email and blog comments, and hopefully you're reading on the blog because that's really helpful. But got this from Greg. Let's look at some email and maybe enjoy that. You'll be back from Jerusalem if you're still alive next time we talk.
And, yeah, hopefully I'm not there when they go to war.
Hopefully there'll be something you'll be free about to talk about that'll...
Yeah,
help us process that.
I'll see.
That'd be fun. Greg wrote this. This is from Hong Kong. Wow, you guys light up my day or night. Sitting here in Hong Kong at my iMac just listening to this podcast was so natural, so enjoyable, and so refreshing. The gospel that you explain, the good news that isn't rigorous striving to do things and that we cannot do anyway.
Oh, that is good news.
Makes me jump up and down on the inside. And your laughter must be so genuine and spiritually healthy because my nerves and bones feel so good after listening to you guys each time. I listen to the audiobook version of The Shack each year now, and when I go for my holidays in Thailand, it's my little tradition, and now I'm cheating because I'm listening to it like every month now. Love you guys. Feel like I'm just sitting right there with you. The magic never ends. That could be a new tagline for the podcast. The magic never ends. And then we've got the doctrine police going, you can't even use a word like magic because it's just totally against God.
And you light up my life.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy that. And then Elisa, I think that's how you pronounce the name, wrote, I was just listening to you guys and thinking about preacher-taining. I think that the growing sense of emptiness and lack of life that inevitably creeps in when you are a preacher-tainer or even just a works-oriented Christian is deep down, knowing that it's a role that doesn't require who you really are, a role that doesn't want or need the real you. Boy, that fit with what we talked about last week, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness to some preacher-taining, some of it's pretty good.
And some guys do it well, and honestly, I agree.
So part of me goes, you know, and I can't imagine it's all a game. You know, I mean, the reality is there are some folks that are just incredible communicators, and I really enjoy listening to them. I just don't like all the trappings that surround it.
Absolutely.
You know, and so it's just a funny term.
Yeah, we got a letter. We actually got a letter from the guy who used the term, and he said, didn't you know that was all a joke? And I was going, you know, I don't think I knew it was all a joke.
it was quite accurate.
It was too real, but yeah, he was writing it satirically, and it was sent to me, and I just glimpsed it.
Oh, from the author guy that wrote that?
That wrote the blog that I read from?
Oh.
Yeah, he wrote me, said, hey, you know what, I was kidding from the start, and I'm going, gosh, you know what, I think it was sent to me. That whole holographic story thing was kind of like an Onion kind of an article of... making fun of something that isn't happening.
How does Church Adventures got satellite stuff going on?
Well, satellite stuff, but not the holographic images. So
what do you mean,
not
technology?
It will be there in a couple of years.
I'm sure.
No doubt. That's why we thought it was hilarious.
And I bet those hologram images can put forth their hand and heal you.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll happen.
I'm not sure of that at all.
Oh.
They can throw a hanky at you.
They'll probably swoop.
But you have to have the 3D glasses to get the real sensation of that.
You know, the sad reality is we've probably just given someone a good idea.
But I actually did get a letter from a pretty good preacher-tainer guy, and basically he was saying, it's not all wrong, is it? And I said, no, I don't.
There's a lot of life everywhere. It's a question of where the shepherd wants you to be.
Well, and the point of the podcast was the dependence on the preacher-tainer. Not that people can't teach accurately, humorously, and in reality, things about God that are true. That's fine. But if my spiritual life is now lived out through my preacher-tainer, that's the problem.
That's when you know you've become pew fodder.
Yes.
See, the issue is not about the preacher-tainer. It's a question of, are you pew fodder?
Unless the preacher-tainer wants pew fodder. Then that's another deal. Anyway, Lyle wrote this. Love this podcast. He's talking about the one on the still small voice listening to Jesus. I was able to relate to it so many levels. It was a few years into my walk with God that I realized he spoke to me in the first person. He never said, I am God, do this or that. But I would think thoughts that I came to learn were not mine, but his. And I look back at that time that I had thought that I wanted to deal with drug addicts and alcoholics. Well, the truth was that I didn't want to do that, and I ignored the thought, but it persisted. I want to deal with drug addicts and alcoholics. Now, I didn't ignore it, but I fought against it, saying to myself, don't be stupid. I don't want to do that. After 2 or 3 weeks of the thought persisting, I suddenly said, God, is that you? I felt a resounding yes within myself immediately, and I was excited at the prospect that ministry went on for 23 years, taking up to 19 guys at a time into our home to live with us while all their attending hurts and problems. And our 3 daughters grew up in that environment, and they were all enriched by it. What an exciting part of our lives. Learning to hear that still small voice through it all, resting in the fact that he will speak and will get through when he wants to. No striving on my part to get Father to tell me what he wants me to do. He provides all the wisdom, the love, the finance, the courage, et cetera, et cetera. What a great story.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I was enjoying this in the Gospels the other day. You know what's so unique and different about Jesus as opposed to most styles of leadership? Because most styles of leadership, honestly, they tend to get their authority trading through some lens of fear and mystery. I mean, that's a powerful concoction. When you look at someone like, you revere them and you're not quite sure, and they sort of are cloaked in that. That's a pretty heady deal. Yep. Jesus is going like, you know what? Hey, guys, no longer do I call you slaves. You're my friends. And slaves don't really know what their master's doing. But I've freely told you everything. And it's like, why do we live in this place that somehow, well, God just speaks. I mean, I've even said this. God just speaks on a need-to-know basis. Well, that might be true, but what do you mean by that? I think he freely is wanting us to understand. I don't think he's like, well, good luck finding the will of God for your life. Like it's going to be this hard thing. I think he's wanting to have that discussion, wanting to freely unfold those things to you. And I don't think we go with it. I don't think we go with that expectation. I think most people are like, well, I don't know. It's really hard to figure out. And I'm not so sure it is.
We've been taught that God's a bit of a miser. You know, he parcels out bare minimum stuff just to keep us as confused as possible because that somehow blesses him. And I think the early church, Paul's description of God being a generous father from 2 Corinthians, and our generosity rises out of his generosity. I think God freely, fully wants to engage us in this life more than we want to engage it. And whenever it doesn't look like that to us, like I'm trying to beg more out of God than he's willing to give to me, it's because we're missing something. Not because he's miserly. Not because, nope. I'm gonna make my will so hard to guess, and then I'm going to give you a test on it at the end, and if you got it wrong, you're going to get punished for it. Because I want to freely show you what you need to know to live fully in me. It may not be the way I want it to happen. I think that's almost always true. Just like this guy said, you know, this thought. I love what he said about it being in the first person. God said, I want to touch drug addicts and alcoholics. And it's not even, I want you to. It's, I want to. And it's fine. Is that you, God? Are you inviting me? You know, Jesus saying, only do the things I saw the Father doing. Father wanted to touch alcoholics and drug addicts through this brother's life. But God didn't say you have to do it. He just said, I want to do it. Until the wanting grew out of that man's heart too. Going, okay, I don't really want to, but if that's where you are, I want to be there.
You know, one of the most encouraging scriptures is, you know, for it is God who is at work in you both to will and to do according to his good pleasure. You know how cool, you know, I read that and I go like, what? Really? He's at work in me, both to will and to do. Meaning, he's going to give me the want to and the ability to.
Yeah.
According to what? His good pleasure. Meaning, this is going to be a good deal.
Yeah.
I do want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't understand the way people talk about, you know, oh, the will of God. Like, you know, that's going to... and you're going to have to do that. It's like, what? I don't get that.
Because when I was growing up, it was always the will of God versus the lusts of men. And the lusts of men always sounded more exciting than the will
of God.
Or
just fun.
Yes. That's what lusts of men sound like.
Fun is what I want to do. And then there's the will of God. And you're just going like, what?
When we missed, I was talking to someone this week about how frustrated they seem to think Jesus was with, you know, all the Pharisee stuff and all that was going on. I mean, just, and they carry this inner frustration with them where they feel like they've always got to push back against the abusive Pharisees of our day. And my thinking through that with them was just, you know, Jesus says at the end of it, this passage about friendship, John 14 and 15, he says a couple of times, I'm telling you these things so that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. I'm not telling you these things so you can be a frustrated, gotta go pick on the abusive people in the sandbox. But I'm telling you these things so that you can live inside my joy. And inside my joy, I think that's even the best way. If you want to poke a Pharisee in the eye,
have fun.
The best way is to have fun with Jesus near them, because it just absolutely freaks them out. It really does.
We better stop that.
I'm going to withhold the name on this one. I'm finally working my way through He Loves Me, and I just got to the part in chapter 4 about living loved. I've heard that phrase repeated regularly over the past few weeks while listening to dozens of podcasts, knowing it's what I ought to do. Okay,
what?
That's going to make it tough.
Not from us.
Knowing God wanted to make that concept real to me, just not getting it. I could sense Him waiting patiently for me to understand, and a part of me really wanted to understand, but there's still a stubbornness in me that wanted to eschew. Boy, that's a word.
What?
He wanted to eschew the experience of relationship with Him for the safety of the head knowledge. It reminded me of when I was a kid learning to ride a bike. Anytime someone asked me if I knew how, I would say yes, followed by the caveat, but I can't actually ride. I love that. I know how to ride. I just actually can't.
There's a lot of truth there.
Oh, absolutely. In other words, I knew the mechanics of it and what I was supposed to do, but I equated that with being able to ride. I could never simply admit I didn't know how. It was too embarrassing. But after days of actually getting on the bike, trying to figure it out, it finally clicked. I could ride. What freedom. After that, I couldn't wait to go riding every day. I suppose I could take the analogy much further. But my point here is that after years of not living loved, it finally just clicked while reading chapter 4. For me, not living loved has manifested itself most evidently in my struggle with pornography. I was introduced to it at the age of 11, and after becoming a Christian at age 12, I entered into a cycle of shame and sin management that has continued to this day, 25 years later, as I have battled with temptation in many forms, be it fantasies, the internet, or even very recently, getting emotionally involved with another woman. It's a long story, but thankfully I ended that relationship after only a few months and have been slowly restoring relationship with my wife, thanks to her forgiveness and love as well as God's grace. However, in the last several weeks, I've been asking God to reveal to me why I felt the need for that relationship in the first place, and why I sometimes still feel it necessary to fantasize or look at pornography. At this point, it feels more like a compulsion than a real desire of my heart. That's insightful.
Huh.
My heart isn't really even in it anymore, and I don't get pleasure from it that I once did. So why am I still doing it? I've always known I was trying to fill a void, and it somehow related to how I viewed God. But I kept looking for some complex reason, like my father never being around as a kid, etc. But when I read the phrase in He Loves Me, when we indulge ourselves in sin, we live less loved, a real sense of freedom just began to wash over me as I began to realize and accept Father's love for me. I just had to stop and put the book down and meditate on that for a few moments. That's all it was, all these years, so simple and yet so profound. It's amazing. Of course, this is only the beginning. I look forward to finishing the book, continuing to experience the freedom He has brought. I also know it won't all be clear skies and sunny days. I'm sure I'll experience crashes or let my bike sit in the garage now and again. But you know what they say, once you've learned how to ride a bike. And he ends there.
That's profound, man.
That is a profound letter. And I think it is kind of like riding a bike. You can know the mechanics of it and just not get on there. But when my daughter and son learned to ride a bike, I remember spending hours, maybe not hours, but at least moments.
We're doing that with Taylor right now.
I remember taking the training wheels off, and now I've got to run alongside and help hold it, because I don't want my kid to fall over and scratch his knee on the road. I remember being exhausted running around the street, holding it, and then pretending not to hold it, or pretending you are holding it and you're not, so he can get the confidence he's actually riding it alone. And sometimes you need that. It's not that you can tow it under a bike by yourself. Sometimes another person is going to be helpful. You're teaching Taylor to do it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, she's... And one of her biggest challenges is she's kind of embarrassed that she doesn't know how to ride. And it's like, I can clearly, and I've already had that kind of, honey, you know how. It's that you don't have a confidence in your bike riding. You're afraid, right? And it's like, it really is the whole fear thing. Because she has ridden her bike many times. And I'm running alongside, and I'm not holding. I am alongside. I have caught her before she has tumbled. She's yet to tumble. And yet there's that sense that she was embarrassed, thinking everyone else could. And then she finds out that the girl just down the street, who's the same age, is feeling the same way and is also learning. And she's got both her older brothers who know exactly the same thing or are trying to encourage her, like, we totally understand. But there's no substitute with, unless you do it, there is not the thing called doing it.
No.
And there's no substitute for that.
And once you do it, you realize it's not that big a deal. Once you finally learn to ride a bike, it's no longer even scary. You just hop on it, take off, and go, and enjoy it.
Yeah, but it is coming to a place of comfortability where I'm not frightened to death, frightened to inactivity, frightened in a paralyzed way of not doing. It's like every time you're about to fall, we've gotten to this place. It's like, you know what, Taylor? Every time all of a sudden you freak out, you stop doing the things called riding. And that's when you start doing the thing called leaning onto falling. You know, if you kept pedaling, we'd be fine.
Do you do that with far less frustration than I did when I was a parent?
Oh, yes, I do. I do this with
No,
I do this with a lot of humor and grace, and we're having fun where it's like, Taylor, I don't care if you ride your bike ever. I love you. But one of the things that's really fun is doing this, and you know that. So let's just practice.
And maybe that's the reason why people struggle to live loved, is because you just don't want to take the risk of, I may fall down, I may not look good, people may not. It's easier to stay in the driveway talking about how well you can ride a bike. It's another thing to actually get on one and ride it.
And I think people's biggest fear on the whole living loved is they're still deep down. If they were God and they knew what they know about themselves, they wouldn't love them.
Hmm.
I think that I found that in more counseling, I found that to be that bottom root. The problem is they know things about themselves that their best idea of God is their best self to the nth degree, and they're going, yeah, but I wouldn't choose to love me. And it's like that whole bit of, you know what? Can I just back up one step? We love because he first loved us. Can I help you understand that God knows all that? And he still loves you. That doesn't get rid of that. That doesn't excuse that or pretend that's not there. Let's just go and say, yep, that's there. The pornography thing, yep, that's there. Does God love you? Uh-huh.
Yeah, the old chorus we used to sing, I love the line, the one who knows me best loves me most. That's a profound statement.
Yeah.
Because we feel like the only people that really love us are the people that really don't know who we are at our darker moments. They really don't know us, which is why they love us.
And that's why their love doesn't make much of a difference in my life.
No, it's true.
Because I don't feel known.
I'm not. I'm not even letting them see through the cracks
of
my life.
We're pretending.
Yeah, we're protecting. But to come to the subtleness of God knows everything about me, even my darker, I see this guy, you know, pornography and inappropriate relationship with another person. The God who knows him best loves him most.
Yeah.
And that's where transformation, I think, really begins to happen.
And it's like, if I can get someone to look at that, and just with like an intelligence of going, okay, 2 + 2 = 4. Well, I don't feel it's 4. Oh, okay, I don't know what to do with you at that point. I really don't.
Yeah.
It is 4, and if you'll accept that, let that inform your heart.
Yeah.
There's no faking required here. Let's start with the fact that, you know what? Yes, all those awful things about you are absolutely true and probably worse. But that doesn't separate you.
And I wonder if Paul would even argue the Romans 7 thing, that those aren't the real you. The crappy, twisted, broken. It's not the real you. That's not the you God's looking at. God's not looking at this pornography-addicted, selfish, self-centered.
That's not the you he defines. But I think...
But he knows they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, it's like, well, I can't... You know, if he knew they were there... No, he knows they're there.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's not a deterrent.
But he doesn't define you by... I like Paul's Romans 7 language. I know that in my heart, I joyfully want to follow God. So now I know when I do the things I don't want to do, it's not me doing it, but sin that indwells me. I think that's a lovely, convenient moment. I'm not my bad stuff. I have bad stuff. I have twisted places in my life I want God to untwist. But I am not defining me by the twisted places of my life.
Yeah.
And I think most people do.
I do.
In a religious construct.
I think they do. And I think they're afraid that if anyone knew this about me, they wouldn't love me. It's like, you know what? No, God doesn't love you because of those things and for those things, but those things cannot separate you from the love he does have.
Yeah. And only by engaging that love does that stuff get
displaced.
Yeah, they get unraveled. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, you know, once that's in there, that's where love and allowing that to be... you can see this in kids. Kids get offended. I mean, you can see this in adults. It's just I hide it better.
Yep.
Kids get offended, and they turn off their love receiver from that person.
Yeah.
I can watch one of my kids going like, they've hurt. And you know, it's like they've transgressed. They've hurt somebody, and they're shutting down.
Yeah.
And now they're doing everything they can to try to open the heart up again. And the kid who's hurt... locked shut. You know, doesn't matter. And you're just going like, I think we do that in our own fear.
Yeah.
We shut down. And it's not that God doesn't. It's that nobody can. I won't allow it. And it's like, how is that ever going to be helpful? Unless you open up. I mean, I kind of force my kids into a place of acknowledgement. Hey, you're shut down, right? They know it. You know it. I know it. Everyone here knows it. You're shut down. They did wrong, right? Right, right. Everyone agrees. Guess what? The only place of recovery is if you will open up. If you don't, we're going to live here for the... And does anyone enjoy this right now? Anyone? No. we go through this constantly.
Yeah.
But it's the only way to repair what's broken. And I'm just going like, it works.
Yeah, that's why sin is such, it's just going to a dark place to live and shutting down everything that goes on around you. Like you said, no one enjoys that. Even the person who's shut down doesn't enjoy it.
Even if it's justified.
Yes.
There's no recovery once you do that.
There's no healing, no life. Yeah, absolutely. You'll enjoy this letter. I know you don't read my blog, so I'm going to read from my blog. This is a letter I wish I would save for the podcast, but we can do it both. It was on my blog about a month ago now, but I got an email from a friend, and this is a friend who's on a wonderful journey. After raising his kids in this whole religious construct, he's now finding life and freedom. And he's got one daughter who he'll describe as kind of bought into that whole religious thing, and he's got some sons that haven't bought into it at all. And now they're kind of sorting out whether or not God's even real based on what they learned. And he said in reading, he makes a reference in here to the John 12 thing I mentioned, and he loves me, about Jesus praying the God save me prayer or the God glorify your name prayer. But here's what he wrote me. He said, and his sons are going through like job loss and major physical needs in their family and home, major stuff. And I didn't put all that in the blog, but he said, the boys do not like to spill all their problems on me, but oddly, because I'm finally starting to believe in Father's love, it does not hurt or panic me if they do. I don't even feel the need for a save me prayer. Glorify your name settles my heart far better than waiting for God to do some miracle to relieve the pressure. I keep reminding the boys that it is all about learning to live in and trust Father's love. I know they will get there because my oldest daughter, who has her PhD in Phariseeism, and she actually recognized herself and wrote in a comment that said, this sounds like my father, and it actually was her father who wrote it. She was already down this road and will tell anyone, if she is wrong about Father's love, she is hopelessly lost because she cannot go back to where she was. Isn't that a great statement? She can't go, even if she's people who look at her and say, gosh, you're living into, what if that love is wrong? She's saying, I couldn't go back and live unloved again. I'm too deep into this. I know Father will get them there in his time. I am finally at a point where I am free from having to prove God's love for them. And I, when I post this on my blog, I get tons of email from people going, that would be a great freedom. I do feel like I've got to prove God's love to my friends, my coworkers, my family, my kids. He says, I am finally at a point where I am free from having to prove God's love for them. He is doing that quite well all by himself. I keep telling them to just watch and then point out how he is proving his love and care to them. That's a great letter.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that sense of, I don't have to even make you know that God loves you. God's the one that will let you know that he loves you.
Yeah, well, if you could make it happen for somebody else, guess what you've robbed them of? Finding it for themselves.
Yeah.
And there is that weird warpage in dependency. If you were the instrument that they got it from, you're their drug dealer. You're their crack.
I've convinced you that you're loved, you're going to need me to keep doing it. That's what you're saying.
I think the unfortunate reality is, like...
Because then it's just principle.
Yeah, or it's the conduit. Now, when you talk about it, Wayne, I get it. And, I mean, I don't know. I've had those weird relationships where it's like they're trying to be appreciative of what it is that I have helped them supposedly understand, but they don't know it for themselves.
Yeah.
And if they did, they would realize, I don't know that you really need to say all that to me. I'm not here going like, oh, please tell me again.
Yeah.
You just go like, what?
We talked a few weeks ago on the podcast about that, the Holy Spirit being one called alongside to help, and that our engagement with people is not forcing them, making them, convincing them. It's just being alongside. What I love about what he's written is that he's alongside a work Father's already doing in his kids.
Right.
Which is very different than God's not doing anything, and I must
be something. Yeah, he's not trying to do it for God.
And we're having a lot of fun right now, and the project we'll probably talk about later, of going through the Gospels again and getting to tell the story of Jesus in a way that makes him, I think, the Jesus that he was, rather than the kind of the religious veneers we've laid over him. And one of those things that keeps coming up, because I'm reading some of the parables of Matthew 13 and the sower and the seed, just reading through some of that again, and it's always the Son of Man is the one who's sowing. It's God who's putting his work into people's hearts. It's not, evangelism's not happening until we do something. It's like God's not in a moment until I'm there. No, the whole wheat and tares parable is him already sowing the word of God into the world. That's what he does. We're alongside people. And like, if you can ask the provocative question or make the provocative observation that gets somebody to think, oh, that might be God. That's how you really walk alongside somebody, helping them see how loved they are, not having to convince them in the absence of the miracle they're not getting that they want, that God loves them anyway. That's just a horrible conversation to have. When you're the only one there and God isn't there ahead of you, then you're really into a tough situation.
See, it's funny that we probably have about 15, maybe 20 years of making an observation over my... The people that I've helped introduce to Jesus, that I've done through the programmed events and the things and stuff like that, well, I love what they got. But some of the more healthy, long-lasting, still bearing fruit people had nothing to do with that. They were the fruit of genuine friendships that just kind of happened. And Jesus' life spilled into those moments, not because of a have-to, but because of a reality to. And they were introduced to a person that they knew they met, as opposed to a prayer that they prayed or a truth that they learned. It was, they got him.
Yeah.
They still got him in a way that you're just going like, you know what? Once they meet a someone, game over. Sure, there's things to learn. Sure, there's ways to grow. But there's no substitute for that. There's no religious conditioned environment of great worship and great teaching and all great fellowship. And you're just going, there's no substitute that can compare to someone who meets God, very God. Jesus is sowing truth into their life. They're receiving that and going, oh.
We're back to bike riding again.
Yeah.
Not talking about bike riding, not going, I understand all the dynamics of bike riding. I've actually learned to ride a bike. And once you learn to ride a bike, you can get on it anytime you want to and keep riding.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the real life of all that we're talking about living love. If it does, or what people sometimes say, you know, we love, I get introduced somewhere and say, Wayne's a real proponent of the grace message. And I just want to hurl up from the deepest part of my abdomen. Sorry.
I can do for you.
I just want to go croak my lizard. My goodness, if this is about a grace message, then we've just reduced it to a principle. Then what really ends up in the day is God doesn't care about whatever you do. Just go ahead and do anything you want. No, this is about grace opening a door to a relationship with someone who wants to transform you. And when you get away from the bike as a principle or an engineering marvel to, I ride a bike and I enjoy riding a bike and it's fun to be out on the road with the wind blowing in your hair and having fun with a bike. That's where this life takes on a reality. And if you don't get there, then like you say, it's just so much talk.
And you know what? You know what doesn't work? There's no such thing as being halfway committed to riding a bike. That's called falling.
Boy, that's true.
That's called, unless you get up and you're pedaling and you're going. Unless you go. It's not riding, and there's nothing happening, and it is far more scary.
Because it's virtually impossible to sit still on a bike. If that bike is moving forward,
you had best be engaged.
I mean, I see some of those weird extremists, you know, kind of jump up and down on a bike that's not going anywhere, but I have no idea what that is. I'm not thinking that's bike riding.
My kids do that stuff. That's amazing.
It's nuts. But for the most part, if you're just trying to sit on the bike, you're going to fall on the ass. Fault.
That was well said.
it would even pass muster with Julie, I believe. Man, we better quit because you're dying. Well, this is five in a row. So after this, we'll actually get back to something maybe more current in our lives, or maybe we'll have taped 10 others to get us through the rest of summer.
But I think the thing that I would be so jazzed about is in terms of people. I mean, I think of even just the whole little journey of the last five we've taped. At the end of the day, there is this guy called God that nobody needs to pretend for. And nobody needs to be the surrogate for. And I can't sort of do the work of for. And he's real. And he's knowable. And he's there for each and every one of us. If we'll allow that to become real. I don't know how to make it real,
right?
But I can allow it to become real.
I can let him relax me into that reality. Because when I hear you talk about that, things that I used to go, what, God can only do this? We can't be part of it. That used to breed such frustration. And I hear you talking about, I'm going, oh, thank God. That's a deep exhale.
Yeah, I need one of those.
and a deep inhale would help you too. That's just a deep exhale of, I don't find it at all threatening that if God doesn't, I can't. I just find that incredibly relaxing. Yeah, I can't.
If God doesn't, why would I?
I can't if he doesn't. And he does. As Jesus says, my Father is always working. He may not be doing what I think he should be doing, but Father's always working in my life, in the people around me. The freedom is beginning to tune into what he's doing instead of trying to get him to do what we think he should
do. If he is at work in us both to will and to do, and then that other part is really important, according to his good pleasure, you want to tune into his good pleasure? It is tuning into what he is both giving the want to and the ability to. That, I mean, when Jesus says, my food is to do the will of my Father,
yeah,
that satisfying, pleasing thing, gosh, to start to discern what that is in your life and to be able to relax into it, that is pleasurable.
That is life. And as Jesus says, that, to me, that's the abundant life. It's not, are my circumstances wonderful? It's, am I in there with him?
Yeah.
And is his glory unfolding?
Yeah.
And when it is, it's all good. Well, enjoy Jerusalem. Hope you make it back.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.